Now that Wendy's has these new biggie deals, everyone in the family can get what they're craving, from Nugs to JBCs. The parental units can get an $8 biggie bundle, the eldest who think they're so grown can get a $6 biggie bag, and the little one who can do no wrong can get a $4 biggie bites. You know, assuming they have a credit card. No, I'm kidding. We take cash too. $4, $6, and $8 biggie deals for the whole family. Only at Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.
This is iRadio's
Group Chat.
If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.
It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and here on iRadio's Group Chat, we'd love to create awareness and honour the millions of people that breast cancer affects every single year. And one amazing lady who went through breast cancer herself at a very young age and came out the other side a bit stronger is Lauren Barrett, who joins me now. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us on iRadio's Group Chat.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you on as well. Let us start from the beginning, shall we? Because there may be some people that are unfamiliar with your story. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Lauren. I am now 25. I am from Tralee in Kerry, and I am a PhD student currently in UCC in Cork. I guess my story, it kind of starts a bit before me. So my mom actually had ovarian cancer when I was 16, and she was later tested and found that she was positive for the BRCA mutation. So this is a genetic mutation that links ovarian cancer and breast cancer mostly, and there is a couple of other ones, but the two main risks are ovarian cancer and breast cancer. So I guess that was always kind of on my mind, like it was always on our radar really from when I was 16. So my mom had treatment and she is fully in remission. I think she's coming up to 10 years or Amazing. Something like that. So she had follow-up surgeries, preventative surgeries because of the BRCA mutation, but she was fully treated. She had a full hysterectomy, so she was kind of in the clear, and we thought that that was our bout with cancer done within the family, I guess. And then I decided that I wanted to get my own genetic testing done. So in Ireland, it was at the time anyway, I'm not too sure if it's still the case, but there's just one place that you go to get your genetic testing in Dublin. So they're kind of quite rigid on who is eligible to get it done. So because I had, my mom was a genetic carrier and had already had an instance of cancer as a result of it, we thought that I would be eligible, but they're not really keen on doing it before you turn 25. And I had decided I wanted to get it done at like 20-ish. So I decided and I managed to push and was able to get an appointment. The appointment came for, I think it was May 2021. I was in my third year of college at the time, so I was in third year of my neuroscience bachelor's degree in UCC, so I was doing exams, so I pushed it out a month, thinking that would be fine. And then in April 2021, so 2 months before I was due to have this appointment, I found a lump myself.
Did you think at the time, you know, possibly this could be cancer, or was there a part of you that thought, look, surely I'm so young, like as in surely it couldn't be? Because I feel like there is a narrative that, you know,
yeah,
like when you are quite young, you know, it means probably nothing, you know, and that's a narrative that definitely I think needs to change. But what happened next then after finding the lump?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at 21, like you think you're invincible, like it was the least of my concerns really. So because I think of the history, so I found the lump and I got feeling straight away. They say that you do have this feeling, but obviously you hope you're just being a hypochondriac really. So I found the lump, went to my GP, and they said they don't think it's anything serious because of my age, but we'll refer you to Cork, which is the nearest centre of excellence to me, just because of the genetic risk and whatever. So they said, well, mark it as urgent. We don't think it's urgent, but just to get through the system. So I said, that's fine, we'll do all of this. I felt better knowing that I was doing the right thing. I was ticking all the boxes and going to the people and doing the steps to get it all done. And I would be quite a proactive person in that way. I wouldn't have been able to sit on this and not do anything about it. So I saw my GP, that referral was sent to Cork, and I was told you'd hear within 2 weeks. I was doing my exam, so this was COVID times, obviously it was 2021,
yeah.
So my third year of college was fully online, so we were doing online exams. I was like, okay, get through the exams, kind of compartmentalize things a little bit, and I'll get the appointment when I get the appointment. 3 weeks later, end of exams, no sign of any appointment. So I called CUH and they said that basically, I don't think it was a person that did it. I presume it's some kind of system, but my referral had been deemed not urgent, purely based on my age. So I was presenting as a 21-year-old. So they said, that's not urgent. And I was put on a waiting list, which at the time was somewhere between 6 and 8 months.
Oh gosh, I can imagine that if you already had, you know, the gut feeling yourself, you know, and people did, I have heard that before, that sometimes people feel like they just know. They just know that's what it is.
It's a bit of a weird one. Mm. It's hard to explain, really. But you just have a bit of a feeling. And my mom would have said that when she had her symptoms, she didn't have this at all. She thought there was nothing wrong with her. So this was the first time we'd presented that way.
Yeah.
I just had a bad feeling. I went to my mom, went to the doctor. And even when the doctors were saying, like, I don't think it's anything, I was like,
I know what you mean. And how did you end up eventually getting the diagnosis then? What was it that managed to finally get you your case seen?
So it was purely down to the fact that I had health insurance. So the public waiting list was, like I said, 6 to 8 months to be seen. And I can imagine with COVID at the time, that probably could have even been longer. It was so hard to judge at the time. There was kind of peaks and troughs and of cases, and things were happening and then they weren't happening. So I don't know when I would have actually been seen, but I went back to my GP and said, can it be put through privately? And they said, no problem. So you're seeing the same doctor in the same hospital, just quicker, really.
Yeah.
So they said, you'll hear within a week. 10 days later, heard nothing. So I called them. It's only really for the fact that I bothered everybody. And I just wanted to get it sorted and boxed off, whether it was something or nothing. I just had to get to the bottom of it. So I called them and they said there was some issue with faxing, or they didn't have my referral. And they were like, okay, we'll contact your GP, gave them the email. And they were like, can you come up next week? We'll book you in. And I said, no problem. I will be there. And so I got an appointment for the following week. And the night before my appointment, got a call saying the HSC had been cyber hacked. So I don't know if you remember when that all happened.
I do.
And all the computers went down. So we really had all of the obstacles trying to stop me from getting into this hospital.
It was coming from every side, really. Like, as in, it's actually COVID. Quite unbelievable. Like, the whole thing. Yeah. That's just mad.
It was such a crazy time. But they said, we can still see you. Like, you can come to the hospital, but it'll be a physical exam. You won't be getting any scans, because there was an issue with, like, keeping the scans on files or something to the computers. But I said, I don't care. I don't care who sees me or what they do.
I will be there. Yeah.
Somebody will do something. And I thought it would kind of get my foot in the door, get the ball rolling a little bit. So I said, no problem. We'll be there. I don't care if there's no computer. So I went up to Cork with my mom, and we had a physical, like a consultation with the consultant. And he said, based on a physical exam, it was on my left side. It was kind of under my arm. So he gave me this scientific name of a sweat gland cyst, basically, and said, I think this is what it is, but based on your genetic history, we're going to send you across to get an ultrasound. You're way too young for a mammogram. And I said, no problem. Perfect. And it was just that at the time, whoever wanted to see the ultrasound had to be in the room. I think they couldn't. There was an issue with, like, saving files or something like that. So I said, that's no problem. So I had the ultrasound immediately, which was really good. So I was seen in one room, and I was just moved across to the main hospital from the consultancy rooms straight away. So I was able to get the scans done, because we do live kind of an hour and a half, 2 hours away from the hospital. So it was nice to be able to get everything done in the one go. Once I got in, my treatment was quite good. It was just getting to CUH was the issue. So they did the ultrasound, and you could just see, I think I'd had an ultrasound when I was younger, but like in the movies when they go across and there's a baby, there was just this big black mass that you could see on the ultrasound. And I was like, oh, I don't think that's meant to be there. So they said, we're going to send you across the room, across the way, you'll get a mammogram. And then it just started to kind of snowball a bit. So it went from no scans to one scan to two scans. And then you come back from the mammogram and they said, okay, we're going to take a biopsy. And I was like, oh, okay, here we go. Like, it was all becoming something. So they did biopsy. Thankfully, everything was done in the one day. It was all quite efficient once I got there. And they said, right, you go home and we'll call you in a few days or next week with results. And I think it was 2 or 3 days after I had this biopsy, I had my appointment for my genetic testing. So it was all this big, I don't like to use the word coincidence, but they did all come at the same time. And I planned the genetic test way before I ever found the lump. So went to Dublin to St. James's and got the genetic test. Is just a consultation and a blood test. And they make sure that you are of enough risk, basically, to get the blood test done. So I had my consult and he was like, yeah, like you are quite young though still. And I know your mom had it. And my dad was like, tell them. So I was like, oh, yes, I already have a lump. Actually, I've had a biopsy and I'm waiting for the results. So they were like, okay, give her the test. Because BRCA, the mutation that my mom has, can present itself as a younger case in breast cancer. So it is still not as likely, I don't think, to have it at my age, but the younger instances of breast cancer seem to be genetic, mostly. So I had my genetic test done. That takes about a month to come back. And then went on a little staycation. I think restrictions must have lifted slightly. So I was in West Cork with my friends and got a call from my nurse saying, can you come back to CUH tomorrow to get your results and don't come by yourself? So that was kind of it was never going to be good news after that, really.
Like, what goes through your head? Like, I can't even imagine being faced with that. And like, your age as well. And I don't like to play too much on age as a factor because, you know, I think that maturity can be beyond years in so many ways. And I'm sure you strike me as one of those people immediately. But being so young, like, how do you digest all of that information when they said it to you? Like,
it was crazy. I just rang my mom and I was like, mom, they're telling me to come back to the hospital tomorrow and don't come by yourself. And she was like, oh, that's just protocol. Like, she was trying to calm me down because I had to drive back from Roscarbery to Tralee, which was going to take me like 2 hours by myself. And the girls that I was with, one of them is one of my best friends, but there were some other girls that I wouldn't have known that well. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had to be like, oh, this is happening. And kind of not think about it too much. I've learned through this whole experience, I am quite good at compartmentalizing things. Like, I can just push things to the back of my head and get on with whatever has to be in front of me. So I don't remember any of the drive back from Cork. And I remember getting back to my mom, and it was kind of nice in a weird way that we then had the morning up. We were like, okay, they're going to give us bad news. So we had the 2 hours and the drive going from Cork, or going from Tralee up to Cork, to say like what kind of questions you want. And like, because a lot of people say they're quite shocked when they get the diagnosis, whereas because I kind of knew it was coming, and I don't know, was it the science mind in me? I was like, okay, so when do we do this? What do we do here? What's going on here? Do I need chemo? Like, blah, blah, blah. And I was fine. And I was asking really direct questions until I said, is my hair going to fall out? Because my mom had cold capped her hair, which is like freezes your head basically and you don't lose your hair.
Yeah.
And when I was like, is my hair going to fall out? And they were like, yeah. And I just started bawling, crying. I couldn't cope with that. Like, my hair was kind of as it is now. You can't see it. I always forget about the radio, but it's kind of, I've got this long blonde hair. It was a huge part of
your identity,
who you are as a 21-year-old girl. So I don't think I really got the severity of this at the time. Like, they sit down and they say they have to do more scans to do staging, so I didn't realize what stage it was at the time. But they just said, unfortunately it is a cancerous tumor, but we're going to work on a treatment plan. And there's a big thing with like quite a multidisciplinary team. So because I was quite young, they were meeting with kind of surgeons, plastic surgeons, people, oncologists, radiation therapists. Everybody seemed to be coming in for these meetings to talk about my case. Then with like fertility side of things. So I actually had a round of egg retrieval done. So like the start process of IVF, because they put you into menopause when you're going through chemotherapy. If you're premenopausal naturally, so they don't know how your body will react to that. Or like the Venn diagram I always described is kind of two separate circles. So it's people my age and people that have this treatment regime, and there's no overlap really between these. So they really didn't know what was going to happen. But I remember saying to him like, oh, I've got work tomorrow and I've got a football match on Sunday and I start final year in September. And Professor Edmund just kind of looked at me and he was like, nope, you don't anymore. Like, you really have to focus on getting better. I don't think I really understood how severe it was. Like, I was diagnosed on the 4th of June, and in my head that was going to be all sorted by the time we got to September. So she was pretty optimistic that way. But
what did the journey look like then for you? Was it chemo, surgery, things like that? And how long did the treatment like go on for?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed on the 4th of June and I started my chemotherapy on the 9th of July. So it was quite quick in that way. I know there's some people that if they're having surgery, they could be diagnosed Friday and have surgery on the following week. So it was slow in that sense. But the month I was able to get a round of egg retrieval done, at all my staging scans, your PET scans, your CTs, all these kind of things. I got the results back from my genetic test, and I don't know, do they all have access to this kind of file thing? But he was like, oh, you won't be surprised to know that you do have the BRCA mutation, like based on the update that's been made to your case since I saw you last, because when I'd seen him, it had just been biopsied. We didn't have results yet. So the fact that I had the BRCA mutation kind of changed my treatment plan a bit, because the risk of recurrence is higher. So I started my chemotherapy on the 9th of July. And I had two different types. So I had ACT chemo is what they call the regime. So the AC chemo is quite a harsh one. It's every 2 weeks. And I had that four times. So I had that for 2 months. That's your hair falls out, you're nauseous. You have to get this new last cell, like a white blood cell stimulating injection. It was pretty rough, really. The hair falling out is just the worst. Like, I'll never forget that. And then I spent I woke up on the morning of my 22nd birthday and had such a bad migraine and had to go into the hospital. My chemotherapy was done in Tralee, luckily, so it was only kind of 10 minutes away from my house. But I went into the hospital and I had to get like IV fluids to get rid of the headache. And I just remember being sat in the corner of the room, like bawling, crying. And the nurses were like, oh, is it that sore? And I was like, no, it's my birthday. And they're all so good inside these places. They made all of the patients, most of the patients were older people, so there was nobody really there my age. So the nurses became my friends, whether they wanted to or not. But they got a cake in and put a candle on it and got all the people in the room to sing happy birthday to me. So there's nice points that happened through the treatment. But chemotherapy was pretty rough. I finished that on the 23rd of November. Then I had kind of a month, 6 weeks off. I was due to have my surgery on the 10th of January, and then I got COVID that Christmas, so Christmas 2021, and called the hospital and said, like, just letting you know, I'll be out of my, I don't know, was it a week or 2 weeks isolation at that point, but I would have been cleared. And they said, oh no, like, you can't have surgery for 7 weeks after you've had COVID. I said, well, why didn't you tell me that? I obviously never would have left my house over Christmas if I knew that I couldn't have surgery. But there's a bit of a period. You should have surgery within 8 weeks of finishing chemotherapy. Otherwise, there's a risk of it coming back, I guess.
Okay.
So I was already at the 7 week mark. So they didn't want to wait any later for me to have my surgery. But they didn't want to do my surgery because I just had COVID. So we were in a bit of a sticky situation
for sure.
But they were saying, you'll either go back on chemotherapy or you can get one side done. So basically I'd had a full pathological response to my chemotherapy. So the lump to palpate wasn't there anymore. But because of the BRCA mutation, they said the risk of recurrence is high. So I opted to have a bilateral mastectomy. So both taken instead of just the one. So it was quite an extreme surgery, which meant that I would have been under for kind of, it was like 6 hours or something. So they didn't want to do that after the COVID. But I went full scientist and I was like, oh, you have my bloods from the 20th of December. And I'm sure I was a nightmare to deal with, but I was like, I'll go to my GP now. I'll get my bloods done, send them up to Cork. And if my clotting factors are the same as they were then, as they are now, then I'll see you on the 10th. I just gave up. I was like, I need to get this done. Like, it would have just delayed things so much. And I was over it at this point. So I went to my GP, got my bloods done, sent them up to Cork, and they were like, fine, like, yeah, healthy, like, your bloods are fine. Whatever strain of COVID was going around at the time was like upper respiratory, so shouldn't have been affecting the lungs, and the risk would have been like a blood clot in such a long surgery. So they were like, our anesthesiologist won't do it, but we've come up with some new plan and we're finding you a new one, and we have to push it out 1 week, but you'll get your surgery done as normal. So there was all of the delays really tried to come at me, and I rejected all of them really. But so I had my surgery done, bilateral mastectomy and immediate reconstruction on the 17th. They leave you to recover for like 6 weeks-ish. And then the 1st of March, I had, I started radiation. So I had daily radiation for 15 sessions. So I finished up on the 23rd of March, 2021 or 2022. So it was kind of 10 months, roughly, of treatment. Yeah. And then went back to college the following September. So I had to take a year out of college through all of this. The risk of COVID would have been too high.
I was in COVID. I was in college at that time as well. Like, as in, it was high enough of a risk for someone who wasn't going through cancer treatment.
Absolutely.
When did you get the kind of all clear then, I suppose? And what was that feeling like?
I really wish I had like a point, but I didn't really, because I had the full response to the chemo. I remember when I went in one time for a checkup in the middle of my chemotherapy, and they did like a physical exam, and he was like, it's gone. I was like, what? He said, it's gone. Like, I can't feel the tumor. Like, it's not there. So I was like, what do you mean it's not there? Like, I thought it would have stayed and shrunk. Like, you could feel it, because it was a palpable lump. Like, you could feel it reducing, but I thought I was just missing something and that it was gone. So I had a full response to my chemotherapy. The rest of the treatment then was just because of the genetic risk and the risk of recurrence. So my friends, I'm sure, are so sick of me. I celebrate kind of all of them. I call the 4th of June my cancerversary, and then I have when I finish my chemo, when I got my surgery, we call it my boob birthday. And then I guess the 23rd of March, when I finish my radiation, is when I will consider myself kind of fully the start of my kind of remission period, because that was when I was done with treatment and set back into the big bad world.
Did anything unexpected come out of this journey? Like, I dare say, you know, silver linings very likely, because that is a horrific experience that you went through, but you know, life lessons, different perspectives, what type of stuff did you gain from something like that?
I think definitely, like, I now have like a pretty bulletproof mindset. Like, when I was sick at the time and seeing my friends go back to college, like, that was a really hard part for me, because I was diagnosed during the summer. It was kind of okay, it's summer, and then in September everybody went back to college, and I was like, oh no guys, like, you missed the memo, we're not going back this year. Like, you forget that everybody else continues as normal. So that was like such a hard part. But then when I was coming back to college, when you're doing stuff now that you don't really want to do, and I do still give out quite a lot, but I am able to kind of, I have that rock bottom to like bring myself back to and say, okay, well, like, Lauren last year, Lauren 2 years ago, or carried on, like, she would have killed to be doing her college exams, to be back in college and to be with her friends and to be up the walls in the library. Or I play Gaelic football, and like, when they're sending us running in January in the rain, it is still pretty grim. But I had to take a whole year out of this. So it does kind of give you that perspective, I guess, in that, like, nothing is really that deep. Like, everybody is alive and healthy. And I do still consider myself one of the lucky ones. Like, there's so many ways, like, in what I've described to you, that all of the roadblocks that could have ended up being completely different. Like, if I'd never found the lump, or if I'd never gone to the doctor, and if I didn't push and to get seen sooner, I was eventually diagnosed with stage 3, grade 3. So I wouldn't like to think about what would have happened if I'd waited the 6-8 months that they wanted me to wait. So in the grand scheme of things, after the diagnosis, everything went pretty well, and my treatment worked as well as it could have. So I think also having my mom, like, to know kind of what we went through, like, she'd had the chemo and she'd had the surgery, so radiation was the only new thing really. But I was able to go into it, and I never thought that I was going to die, like, at all. And people say that they have this, I don't know if I was just delusional because I was so young, but it never crossed my mind that I was going to die. Like, in my head, my mom had cancer, she had her treatment, and she got better. And that's just what I was going to do. Like, that was the only path that I had in my head. Like, there was never an alternative option. So it brought us all quite close. Like, me, I have two brothers. So I have a younger brother, Jack, and an older brother, Adam. And my mom and my dad were also close. Like, we would have been close anyway, but that definitely does bring you that little bit closer together. So it is mostly kind of a mindset thing, like, whatever I want to do now, or if you're kind of unsure, or I'm just like, okay, well, we'll do it, because I don't put things off at all anymore. Like, if I had put things off and said, oh, I'll do that next year, I have no idea what next year holds. And even when you get to the 5-year mark, they say your risk is considered that of a normal, healthy person. But you just kind of have to take that, I think, with a bit of a pinch of salt, especially with genetic mutations. So it's a very live in the moment, within reason. I mean, I'm doing a PhD, so I have committed to 3 more years of college. So I kind of am and I kind of haven't, but I'm making up for the years that I lost in college with COVID and cancer.
This is it. All of that library experience that you missed out on, you're going to make up for it in abundance now with this PhD.
Yeah, well, I'm a final year PhD student now, so I've got 2 years done. I started my third year yesterday.
Wow. Actually,
my third and final year. So it's busy. And when I'm in the library now, I'm sure I'll be like, why did you say that? Most people would have gone traveling or done something else, but...
Well, if there's someone listening this evening, particularly young people like around your age, what would you tell them to, I suppose, how should they be looking after themselves to help pick up on these things if they are going to arise as soon as possible?
Yeah, I think, like, there is a lot of media campaigns, and obviously October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I remember seeing the year before I was diagnosed, Rosie Connolly had something up about, she had found a lump and went to the doctor and it turned out to be nothing. But I just remember seeing it and saying, like, oh, like, I should probably be doing self-checks. And that was somebody who had cancer in the family. So, like, it's not on our radar at all, which is a lot of, like, there's a lot of work being done in Breast Cancer Ireland at the moment. I would do some work with them, and just promotion and telling my story and stuff, because although it seems like I was too young at 21, and most of the time, if you're presenting as a 21-year-old, especially with, like, your breast tissue, like, it is changing, and, like, to do with your cycle, like, it's kind of a hard one to judge. But to anybody that isn't doing self-checks, even if you, like, we're always on our phones, so I tell everyone to set a reminder. There is a big campaign of Feel on the First. So the first of every month, you have a reminder, goes off on your phone, to do a self-check.
Yeah.
And then at least you know that it wasn't there this month, or it was there last month and whatever, or else just to know what's normal for you. So not everybody is going to be as stubborn as I am, but at least if you were to go to your doctor and say, like, okay, this isn't normal for me, and it gives you a lot of confidence and a lot of, like, it's quite empowering to know, like, I know that this wasn't here beforehand. So it makes it easier to kind of fight your case, because a lot of the times you will be told as a young person, like, you're young, like, it's nothing, and you don't know anything, and all this kind of thing. So to have that knowledge is huge, and it is obviously such a scary thing. But what I've said to anybody is, if you have found the lump, then, like, it's not going anywhere. So, like, the diagnosis was the best thing that happened to me after the fact of getting cancer. Like, the cancer wasn't going away if I got diagnosed or not. So if I hadn't been diagnosed, it just meant that I wasn't going to get better. Like, me going to the doctor and getting diagnosed was the start of me getting better. It wasn't the end of my life. Like, the end of my life was the start of the tumor, not the diagnosis as such. So, I mean, it's a difficult thing to do, and it's easy for me to say coming from the other side, but it is just, it's such an important thing to do. And a lot of people, young people, even if people are listening to this, and I've had people come up to me since and say, like, oh, I'm 30 or I'm 40 and I thought I was too young to get breast cancer. So the fact that you got it at 21 means I'm definitely not. So even if that hits home to people that there is really no discrimination. And there has been other people since me that have been diagnosed at 20 and 21, 22. So I'm not the only one, really.
You've become a great campaigner. I've noticed, you know, on your social media, you have raised money for breast cancer awareness and things like that. If people are looking to follow along with that journey and perhaps donate or even just familiarise themselves with all of this, where can they find you on social media?
So I do a lot of kind of, like what you're saying, promotion, and my own story is on my own Instagram. So it's at laur.bar, so laur.bar. But also Breast Cancer Ireland. Most of the work that I've done has been through Breast Cancer Ireland. They have like such good resources for like how to self-check. Like the biggest thing I found with young people is that they don't know that they should be doing it, and then they don't know how. So there is actually an app that has the list of it on how to do your self-check, the signs and symptoms to look for, because just because I found a lump, it doesn't always show up that way in other people. So there's an app, and it can do what I said, like set the reminder. So you can set a reminder that on the first or on whatever day of the month, the app will give you a reminder and say it's time to do your self-check, which is just such an important tool. And there's other patient stories up there. There's such a nice group of us in a weird way. Like it brings you closer to all of these other people. So I would have met people through Breast Cancer Ireland or through even social media. I've had people reach out to me since on like Instagram or TikTok, or I actually had one girl on LinkedIn. So it's really anywhere. She had posted about that she had just been diagnosed and she was taking a year out of college. And I just texted her and I was like, oh, like you are me 12 months ago. So you'll be fine. And like, if you look at me now, I'm going back in and starting college. So it's just nice to be the person that people can kind of look forward to being. Like there was nobody when I was going through it that I could see online that was anywhere near my age, really, either in treatment or that had finished treatment. So it's just nice to have somebody that can ask these questions to. Like even my doctors, God help them, like I was asking them if I could wear a fake tan on my head after my hair fell out, and if I could still get my nails done, and all of these questions. And they were like, oh, I don't know, Lauren. Like most of the people that they were seeing were kind of 50s, 60s up. So it is just nice to have somebody that unfortunately gets it. So I have no problem with people like reaching out to me if they have questions or anything like that. Or for more scientific and factual knowledge, I would probably go to Breast Cancer Ireland.
Lauren, you've been the most amazing guest I've chatted to in probably a very, very, very long time. Like you are such an amazing spokesperson now for this cause. And seeing that you went through absolute hell and back and you've got to where you are now, inspiring so many other people, I'm sure that there is somebody listening this evening who'll feel really touched by your story. And, you know, we're the same age. So, you know, the life stages you talked about, you know, I was going through them at the same time as you. And, you know, like you've just left me a bit speechless this evening. I won't lie, like your story, I'm just so happy to see that you've come out this other side and you've got your health with you now. And all I can say really is best of luck with the PhD, because I mean, the world is only going to be lucky to have you in it as a scientist. I presume you're doing something in science.
Yeah, I'm working in Parkinson's disease at the moment.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck with it, and thank you for joining us on iRadio's group chat, and I do hope to chat to you again soon.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.